We are planning to have a Q&A Sunday for 2 Corinthians, and that is currently on the schedule for October 13th. I have two good questions already, but if you have more questions, please let me know as we are wrapping up close pretty shortly here. So this week, then we got 2 weeks on chapter 12 and 1 week on chapter 13 as scheduled. We can bump it maybe 1 week or one way or the other. But if you have questions about things in 2 Corinthians that you feel like, I didn't understand what Caleb said, or I didn't say something, because sometimes I don't. Sometimes there are things I don't talk about that are there that are adjacent questions. That's your opportunity. I don't like handling those questions live, so if you could please ask those in advance so I can actually study for that week, that will be coming up. And if you're relatively new to joining our church for a sermon series, when we do books like this, we do have a tendency to have a Q&A Sunday afterwards so that you can always have an opportunity to ask the burning questions that we did not answer the first time through. So today we're going to finish chapter 11, 2 Corinthians chapter 11, and we're going to start in verse 16, just so that we remember that the first part of chapter 11, Paul has begun indulging the idea that he should be explaining to the Corinthian church why it is that they should listen to him. That's kind of was the burning question that the Corinth church had, at least at one point, even close to the majority, but at current time of him writing this, it seems like there's a minority, as well as the other teachers that are at the church in Corinth, are asking the question, why should we listen to you? And so they said, you know, let Paul give his credentials. And Paul, up until chapter 11, has kind of said, no, not doing it. Now we finally get to chapter 11 and chapter 12, and he's like, okay, fine. If I have to, here it is. And so he warned in chapter 10 that he was coming, and that if they had a problem with him writing so boldly, but coming and being kinder in person than his letters would give the impression, that this time that's not going to be the case. This time he's coming ready to argue and destroy the arguments of the other teachers, because the church has confirmed that they don't respect the teaching of these teachers in there, that the majority has said we want to reconcile and go back to our understanding of Jesus that Paul gave us. But there is this conflict still, and Paul is on his way to address this. And so he has warned that he is planning to come to argue, to openly debate the lessons of the other teachers, which is that if you became a Christian the right way by becoming a Jew first, that then your life would be perfect. I know that that's more or less a straw man of their argumentation, but that is, from what we can tell, the general gist of what they are teaching. So in the beginning parts of chapter 11, Paul has said, okay, bear with me for a minute. I'm going to go ahead and enter into what I believe is foolishness of comparing human credentials as though that is a very big deal, that you should listen to people who have checked, marked all these boxes. But since you have begun to listen to the teachers that say that that is exactly what you should do, I will go ahead and talk about it and give you a preview of the arguments that I will be using when I show up. And he tells them that these people compare themselves to each other so that they can look good. And in chapter 11, he says that I have this anxious desire and this jealousy to come and defend you because I promised you to Jesus, but these people are promising you to a different Jesus. And so I have this anxious, jealous, somewhat even upset kind of emotion about this. So let me talk to you about it. And he says, I don't feel like I'm inferior to the super apostles. But up until this point, I haven't been willing to tell you why that's the case, because you should have already known that. You know me. We did work with you. He's addressed two complaints. One, that he's not a very good public speaker, which he says, even if that's the case, it's not like what I've had to say was bad. You learn plenty from my speaking, and the amount of public speaking training I have shouldn't impact what I have to say. You obviously receive the gospel without me being a professional public speaker. Then the second complaint from the false teachers in the church at Corinth was that Paul would not accept pay, which meant either he had no business accepting pay or that he looked down on the people in Corinth and didn't want to take their money because he didn't care about them. And Paul said, that's on its face kind of absurd. In fact, I refused to take pay because I didn't want you to think that the gospel was something that ought to be bought. In fact, I wanted you to understand that it would be free. So I'm going to continue to do that. And in this, he talks about how it is that he wants the church in Corinth, like we should want today, to have a simple devotion to Jesus. And some of the things I said last week could have maybe been overly applied or underly applied in that just because Paul is saying this, I do believe with all my heart that the gospel is very simple. And I said briefly, but that doesn't make Bible study simple. That doesn't mean that everything that you first read as it being simple is the right answer. But it does mean that when we boil down the things that really matter in our lives, the gospel is the most important thing, and it is also not that complicated. And so let us keep that in mind when people try to teach us new things or to tell us that, you have most of it right, but you're missing this. To be wary of that because, as right before our passage today, Paul warns that it is no surprise that these false teachers disguise themselves as true prophets. That's what they want. They want to be considered as just as equal with the other apostles because Satan also disguises himself as an angel of light, which makes it hard for us to recognize. And so let us be cautious when we are being told, like, well, you know, your life would be perfect if, and then someone gives you an example. And he's pointing out that the apostles are revealing to the believers in Corinth, they are false teachers because they're putting themselves at the center of the solving of the problem. They are insistent that if you just believed in Jesus like me, your life would be fine. So now we get into verse 16, which is a continuation, which Paul then repeats in verse 16. He says, I repeat, no one should consider me a fool. He doesn't like the conversation he's being forced to have. He doesn't like it. But he's going to do it because he thinks it's necessary. But he says, just because I say some foolish things, don't think that I am a fool. Because I'm engaging in someone else's foolishness. So he said earlier that bear with me and don't think of me as a fool. And then he says later, well, you put up with those fools, so apparently I shouldn't have to ask you to put up with me. He kind of repeats that again here in this section as well. So verse 16, no one should consider me a fool, but even if you do, at least accept me as a fool. He says, like, even if you think what I'm saying is a little bit foolish, accept me as a fool so that I may boast a little as well. What I'm saying in this matter of boasting, I don't speak as the Lord would speak or with his authority, but foolishly. Since many boast in an unspiritual way or in the flesh, I will also boast. And then verse 19 is that little dig yet again that he did in the first section of chapter 11. For you, being so wise, gladly put up with fools. So he says in the beginning, no one should consider me a fool, but if you do, accept me as a fool, which you have a history of doing because you accept these fools. So he's prefacing his argument to say, I don't really want to say all this stuff, but you guys have accepted someone else's foolishness, which needs addressing, and the only way you want it to be addressed is through foolishness, so let me do it. But the best part of it all is that what Paul says that he thinks is foolish is actually wildly helpful to the readers to differentiate between the false teachers and him. He just didn't want to have to list out all of the things that demonstrate that he's following Jesus and that these people are just making things up. So isn't that interesting that although Paul says, I'm not speaking as the Lord would speak or with his authority when I'm telling you, like, here's this, here's this, here's this, here's this. Everything that he lists proves his point. These teachers are making things up and should not be trusted. They're deceitful. They do not care about you. They do want your money. On this side, however, I care about you. I don't want your money. And look at all the things that demonstrate I do follow Jesus. They don't have anything to show except for a long list of credentials. So if you want a long list, here we go. He says, you being so wise, which is an ironic statement. which is used in 1 Corinthians. Corinthian people think that they're very wise because they are able to listen to all of these public speakers and all of this new information. They're not ignorant by any stretch of the imagination. But Paul says, your judgment's a little bit wonky. So you being so wise, gladly put up with fools. In fact, you put up with if someone enslaves you, if someone devours you, if someone captures you, or if someone dominates you, or if someone hits you in the face. This is what Paul thinks of the teachers that are currently in Corinth that are being allowed to sway the opinion of the Corinthian church. He says, you guys put up with fools all the time, so I shouldn't feel so bad about having to act like a fool for a little bit, because you will even let people enslave you. You're free and have no reason to sell yourself into slavery, and yet these people show up and enslave you. They don't offer you a free relationship with God and great care for you, because their gospel, as Paul would say in many of his other letters, is a turning back to a law-based relationship with God, that now, if you want to be a Christian, if you want to believe in Jesus, first you have to become a Jewish person, which means then you have to keep the law. So you have to keep all the laws, even though you were not born a Jew, you were a Gentile. But you have to keep all of the law and then also believe in Jesus, and then by doing all of the law and believing in Jesus, now your life will be perfect. And Paul is saying, don't buy that for a second. Jesus came and fulfilled the law to set us free by grace so that we can then actually do what the law was trying to point out was the problem, which is our hearts were not correct. We needed someone to change it. He says that you guys are okay with becoming slaves to something you were never even slaves to in the first place, because they do a good job of speaking in public and you feel compelled to pay them. You put up with it if someone devours you, someone captures you, someone dominates you or becomes arrogant and very authoritarian, or if someone hits you in the face. I think this is hyperbole. I don't think that the people there were likely smacking people in the face, although there is some sort of a cultural practice there that potentially could be the case. I don't want to get into it because it's not the main point. What he's saying is you put up with a whole lot from those people, so you can certainly put up with a little from me. Because the teachers come in and tell you your lives are miserable because you do not believe in Jesus the correct way. You must do it this way. And they did it with such domineering authority that Paul is like, I wouldn't even put it past them if they just smacked you around until you listened. And you put up with that. So this is all a preface statement, okay? There's not a ton of like, oh, we need to dig it. Paul is just making the point. You guys consider yourselves to be so wise, and yet you let people come in, and you start listening with an attentive ear to a gospel that enslaves you, that makes you under someone else's, another person's authority that they can domineer over you. That's what you're buying into. And he says, so if you're willing to put up with that foolishness, let me give you some examples of what I consider to be foolish that I even need to talk to you about. So, verse 21, he does say, I say this to our shame or to my shame. We have been too weak for that. He kind of says, I guess it's my fault that I wasn't willing to be so domineering that I was willing to enslave you and smack you around just so you'd stay in line. He's not actually saying, I wish I had done something differently. He's just saying, yeah, I'm not willing to do that. I'm not strong enough to enslave you and to smack you around. So I guess that's our fault. If that's what you thought you needed, was someone to come in and tell you exactly what to do and to be enslaved into a relationship with Jesus, we didn't do it. The end of verse 21, it says, but in whatever anyone dares to boast, whatever these other guys are going to tell you is the reason that you should listen to them, I am talking foolishly. He's like, this is so dumb that I even have to say this. But if anyone that's there telling you you should listen to them because of this, then I will also answer. So he goes through a long list. First claim from the teachers in Corinth, are they Hebrews? So am I. Now, it seems like this question gets asked three times. Are they Israelites? So am I. And are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. There are slight differences between those three for all of us to understand exactly those ones. No one's actually all in agreement. But first, are they Hebrews? Is more heavily leaned towards their ethnicity. Were they born Hebrews? Okay. Do they have a Jewish ethnicity? Paul's like, so do I. So one of the things is the teachers say, like, well, you should listen to us because God had entrusted his word to the Jewish people, and we're Jewish, and let me show you my neat, perfect Jewish lineage. And this is actually what they did. They would say, like, here's my father and my grandfather, and let me show you, like, I am fully Hebrew. Okay? Paul's like, yeah, I can do that. I'm a Hebrew too. He does it in other places in Scripture as well. He talks about what, you know, he's from the tribe of Benjamin and that all this other things. He does this kind of thing in various places in Scripture as well. The second one, are they Israelites? Talks more about the like cultural identity of the Israelites along with their religious identity kind of all mixed in there. And this one versus the, are they a seed of Abraham? The Abraham thing you would think would be connected to the Hebrew one. So again, the lines aren't clear cut. But what he is saying is, well, they're claiming that they were born Jews, they were religious Jews. And then the third claim, if you wanted to make it for sure a different thing than the other two, you can make a claim that what Paul is referring to is he said that in Romans that not all Jews are real Jews and not all children of Abraham are actually born from Abraham. It's a child of faith sort of thing. So I guess the three steps is we were born as Jews, we accepted the Jewish God, and then we also accepted the Jewish Messiah. And Paul's like, okay, when they told you this is why you should listen to me, how did you guys not say, yes, Paul's that way too? Next. And then it says, are they servants of Christ? Which probably ties really well into the seed of Abraham thing. Are they servants of Christ? And then he says, I'm talking like a madman, but I'm a better one. I just love that. I'm sure, depending on the translation, it might not sound nearly as arrogant as that might come across, but he said, they're claiming to be servants of Jesus. That's what they say. Like, you need to listen to us because we have this ethnicity, we have this religious background, and we've accepted Jesus. And he has commissioned us to spread this news that if you want to have a good life, you have to do what we did. Although you can't be born Jewish, so you won't ever be as cool as us, you can still proselytize into Israel and then believe in the Messiah, and then your life will be amazing. And Paul's like, okay, so they're claiming to be servants of Jesus. And the fact that Paul doesn't go down like a three-chapter rabbit trail as what Jesus said would happen to those who followed him is an amazing example of restraint. Because Jesus said multiple times, you want to follow me? Pick up your cross. Follow me. The world hated me. Wait till they meet you. They're going to really hate you. And Jesus said time and time again that my servants are going to face struggles and adversaries and pushback. And Paul's saying, these guys are claiming to be servants of Jesus, yet saying that their lives are perfect. Does that make sense to you? And so he says, if they are claiming to be servants of Christ, and like, let's pretend like we can give it to them, I'm a better servant of Jesus than they are. And so what he says next is what he is saying demonstrates that he's a servant of Jesus for sure. And if they're servants of Jesus, then you should listen to Paul more because he actually follows Jesus more accurately to the way Jesus would intend for his people to follow him. So he's not for sure giving the concession that they are or not servants of Jesus. He's just saying, you should have, when they were giving you the list of credentials, been like, yeah, but like Paul, like what we know about following Jesus, Paul is a really good example of this. So here's what he goes through. He gives a generic overview, then he goes into a more detailed list. He says, I'm a better servant of Jesus with far more labors. I've done more for Jesus than these people have. I've been in prison a whole lot more than they ever have. And I've been beaten so many times that I have lost track. And most of those were near death. It's like, I have been a servant of Jesus going along and marching in the sufferings of Jesus, which he mentioned earlier in 2 Corinthians, that the sufferings is not an indication that you are not following Jesus, because following Jesus looks a lot like following Jesus in his sufferings. And so Paul says, I feel like I'm not inferior in any way just because I went through suffering, because I think it actually points to the fact that I'm following Jesus. Now, some of the things that happen in our lives are not because we follow Jesus. It's sometimes just because we're sinners and we make bad decisions and suffering happens. But what Paul is pointing to here is, I was doing what Jesus asked me to do. Go tell the world about him. And this is the kind of stuff that happened. So first, he says, 5 times I received, and if you like the translation there, it's 40 minus 1, but just for sake of ease, 39 lashes from the Jews. In the time period Paul was living in the Roman Empire and the surrounding adjacent areas, the Jewish people were given far more leniency to like govern themselves to a certain point, which we see in the life of Jesus, that they were allowed to smack them all around and all this stuff, and they never got in trouble because that was part of their religious rulings that they were allowed to keep, and just to keep the peace in that area. And so the Jews were allowed to inflict, because of the rules of their law and with the Romans being in charge, they were allowed to deal out 40 lashes, but they always saved one because they were always worried about the 40th one being the end of somebody. And Paul said, I did that 5 times. Usually, the idea, at least in the Jewish community, was you did something so bad that we're willing to smack you with a whip 39 times, and we're worried you're going to end up dead if we give you the one more. Usually you're done. Like, whatever you did, you just stop doing. 1 time. Paul's like, that's 5 times. Like, when I go into a Jewish area, that's kind of what I expect. And is that not what happened with Jesus? Was he not whipped? Was he not smacked around before that, and then he was beaten? So Paul's like, 5 times the Jews issued one of their harshest legally allowed punishments on me. 5 times. Okay? Verse 25, 3 times I was beaten with rods by the Romans. Okay? So the Jewish people were allowed to whip, but they weren't allowed to do some other punishments, and it also wasn't part of usually what they would do in government. But the Romans would beat you with poles and sticks and just smack you around, which would likely break bones. The whip would tear your skin up and mess you up and scar you up, but these would be like smacking into your bones, right? So 3 times the Romans beat me up. And one of the times that I don't think has happened yet, but Paul's like, hey, you can't do that because I'm a Roman citizen. And so you got to send me to Rome. The fact that this happened 3 times likely means that on certain occasions, Paul just didn't do that. Didn't say, hey, you can't smack me around because I'm a citizen of Rome. A couple times they found out that they imprisoned him or beat him up, like in Philippi. Then they found out later that he was a Roman citizen. They're like, oh, we got to cover that up so we don't get in trouble with the higher-ups. But also it's possible that he was in some locations where the Roman government was so displeased that they didn't care if they would get in trouble or not. They just decided, hey, this guy's causing enough problems, let's beat him with some sticks. Okay? And then Paul says, 1 time, I was even stoned. If you go back in Acts 14, the city, I think, starts with L. It's either Laodicea or Lystra. I'm not sure. Don't quote me. Look it up in Acts chapter 14, if you would. But 1 time, the Jewish people kicked him, like, were so mad that they pushed him out of the city and then stoned him and left him for dead. And then Paul's like, all right, let's get up. Let's go back into the city. And we're like, what are you doing? And he goes in and more or less shakes the dust off and then goes to another city. But like, they stoned him. And stoning as a punishment was not intended to send a message to you because you were going to be dead. The message was to other people, don't listen to this person. Don't do what that person did because they're going to be dead. So they stone him and Paul walks back into the city and they're like, well, that's awkward because you're supposed to be dead. And then he leaves and goes to another city. So Paul's like, listen, I'm following Jesus and everywhere I go and I talk about Jesus, the Jews hate me. The Romans hate me so much so that they dealt out some of the most severe punishments they were allowed to by law. And one time I was, and as far as I understand, maybe because it wasn't a specific type of city or province or whatever that he got stoned in, but that was breaking the law. They broke the law probably to stone Paul. Like they were not allowed to just stone people. Okay. So like Paul's like, so that's been my life. And then he's like, aside from all of that, so like we're still going. So aside from all that, three times I was shipwrecked. On the one that we, well, the one out of two that we know about that Paul writes about hasn't even happened yet. So Paul has been traveling a lot, and he says, everywhere I travel, just the act of traveling is dangerous. One, there's three times that my boat broke apart, okay? Which is likely because Paul wasn't a wealthy individual, not probably taking the like best ships that are available everywhere, but he's like, three times I've been out on a boat, And it just died. And there I am. And he says, so this one time I spent a whole night and a whole day in the open sea just floating around. They didn't have nice quality of life boats. They didn't have helicopters looking for him. He's just sitting out there on a plank of wood for a whole night and a whole day. Why? Because he's trying to follow Jesus and share the gospel with people over the whole world. So he finds himself in this predicament three different times. Soon to be a fourth, because he gets shipwrecked on his way to Rome as well. On frequent journeys, in verse 26, he says, I face dangers from rivers, which we're all like, how are rivers dangerous? Well, if you had to ford them, you know, take a caravan through it or something, especially if it was during flooding, he says, like, the act of traveling is not a safe thing. So, I face dangers from rivers, I face dangers from robbers, because I was going everywhere. I wasn't just going to the safe places, and in between the safe places, there's a whole lot of territory that the government doesn't care about. So he's said that he's probably been like held up multiple times. Dangers from my own people, dangers from the Gentiles. He said, didn't matter where I went, the Jews didn't like me and the Gentiles didn't like me. And then he says, no matter where I went, in the city or in the country or even on the sea, I was in danger. Everywhere I went, danger, danger, danger. There's a 50s sci-fi show, Danger, Will Robinson, danger. He's just like, there's danger everywhere. And then he says, and among that, there's also dangers from false brothers. What Paul is saying is there was never a place where Paul went that Paul felt safe and comfortable. Because anything that should make him feel safe and comfortable, like, oh, these people are, like, they're my countrymen. Like, they get me. They wanted to smack him around and whip him. He didn't want to go over here and say, well, these people don't know me, so clearly they're going to be okay with me as long as I'm okay with them. And the Gentiles didn't like him because he said you can't worship idols, and they were not real thrilled about the fact that their entire livelihood would be going down hill. He also couldn't take safety in the city where there's lots of people. Like, no one's going to kill me because there's lots of people around. He said it wasn't safe for me to be in the city, but it also wasn't safe for me to be just out in the open country because there's robbers and all sorts of other exposure things that are a problem. And then verse 27, he says, among all of that stuff, there's also this work, this tiring nature of what I do, the labor and the hardship and many sleepless nights, hunger and thirst, often without food, cold, and lack of clothing. Paul kind of sums up his life, which he thinks is foolishness to just say, like, these are the reasons you should listen to me. He says, I don't think you should have to have any list of my credentials. And although he has credentials that he does give somewhere else in Scripture, he doesn't give those credentials here as to who he studied with, how many days he spent with Jesus in the wilderness. He lists his life, all of the not positive parts of his life, and says, these are all the reasons that you should listen. So then in verse 28, it says, not to mention any other things, but then he goes on and mentions them. There is the daily pressure on me, my care or concern for all the churches. Who is weak and I am not weak? Who is made to stumble and I do not burn with indignation? It says, aside from all the physical dangers, aside from all the physical tiredness I face, there is this weight on me that maybe you don't understand. When you go around and you start churches in places that they never heard of Jesus before, and you get beat up, hated, you don't have anything to eat or to drink, but you do this for several years, and you start churches, you worry about them. You're concerned for them. You're worried that someone else is going to come in and teach them something, or they're going to forget, or they're going to not fully abandon their previous religion and follow Jesus wholeheartedly. He said, everywhere I go, I have a hard time resting my head because I'm concerned about the churches that God has asked me to start. You think that the people in Corinth who are teaching them that their lives should be better than they are have a hard time sleeping at night because they're so worried about the churches? They've made it kind of evident that they're in it for the money, so they would have a hard time sleeping at night if they knew they weren't getting paid. But it's not because of the love that they have for the people. He says, who's weak that I'm not weak? And who's made to stumble that I do not burn with indignation? He's saying, when there's a church or a person that, you know, is part of the churches that I start, and I find out that they're weak in their faith or having a hard time with something, it impacts me as though it were happening to me. And then he says, and if someone convinces a church or these groups of people to fall away from Jesus, how could that happen without me having this burning anger against those who caused them to stumble? And then he concludes with these couple of statements. If boasting is necessary, if giving you my credentials is necessary, I will boast about my weaknesses. Because that's what he just did. But that's what he's saying. He's like, I'm not going to give you my long list of credentials. He said, like, okay, so they said they're Jews. I'm a Jew. They said that they believed in God according to the law. So did I. They also say that they're seed of Abraham, and by faith now they've accepted the Messiah. So have I. And I'm actually a servant that through his actions demonstrates that I am. But he says, if boasting is necessary, I'll boast about my weaknesses. It's not that Paul is overly proud. Like, he didn't want to tell these, but he's more than happy to keep these things to himself. Like, I've been whipped 5 times. It's not something to be proud of. I've been beaten by the Romans 3 times with sticks, and one time I was stoned, and a couple times I was shipwrecked, and one time I had to spend an entire 24-hour period out in the middle of the water. Like, none of those things are Paul being like, look at me, look how good I am. Remember, he said, what I'm going to have to talk about is foolishness in my mind. He would much rather not talk about these things. But he says, if I have to, if you're forcing my arm to talk about the credentials that you require from me, my credentials are my weaknesses. He has told us the whole book so far, that he doesn't see the contradiction between weakness and a victorious gospel. He's told us that in your weakness, God comes to comfort, so that you can then take that comfort to someone else and comfort them with it. He doesn't have a problem with going through suffering because Jesus went through suffering. And if we're going to follow Jesus, it would make sense that we follow Jesus also in his suffering. Well, Paul is saying, like, if you want to know why you should listen to me, if you need to have things listed for you, I'm going to just list all of the things that have gone wrong in my life. Because Paul knows that in these moments are when God shows up. When Paul's floating in the sea for a day, you think he didn't find comfort in his relationship with God? when he was stoned and questionably dead or just almost dead, you think he didn't say, God. And so Paul said, if you're going to force my hand into boasting, I'll boast about the weaknesses. And he's kind of saying, like, I could go on. I could tell you more. Like, if you need a longer list, but this is the list you're getting. It's just all about all the weakness that I have. And verse 31, the God and Father of the Lord Jesus, who is praised forever, knows I am not lying. He said, like, I didn't make this stuff up. You maybe have never heard about this. I didn't make any of this up. Like, there's witnesses that tell you all about it. And there's a longer list. But I think you get the point. All I'm going to tell you is, in following Jesus with my whole heart, all of these things occurred to me. I was completely powerless to stop them. But it's okay. The gospel is still victorious and glorious and worth believing and following. The next two verses, confusing to me, so just to be honest. You'd think maybe it's just one of those times where the chapter that's coming next should have started. It doesn't make much sense to put it there either. So I think Paul is just like, I want to reinforce what I'm telling you with like just one more. So in conclusion, think about this as well. He said there was this one time in Damascus when Paul was just recently changed his name into Paul from Saul. The early church Christian community was cautious to accept him because they were afraid he'd turn into a double agent. Because his entire life mission, since the stoning of Stephen, was to go around and round up and kill the movement. Now, whether Paul was actively murdering people is not the issue. He wanted that movement stopped. And he was okay with stoning Stephen, and he thought it necessary as part of his religious identity to stop this Christian movement. That wasn't labeled Christianity at the time, but that's what he wanted to stop. He meets Jesus on the road to Damascus, loses his sight, has to go in. Jesus has to go to a follower of him in one of the cities and said, so Saul's out there. I need you to go talk to him. And heal, you know, I'm going to use you to heal him. And he was like, I don't want to do that. And then he gets taken and he has to have like references to even be accepted into the Christian community because of what he had been doing before. And in Damascus, they were introducing him into the Christian community there, trying to say like he has genuinely been changed. Listen to what he has to say. And so in Acts, the testimony of Saul turning into Paul is retold three or four different times. And in one of these cases, in Damascus, the governor under King Aretas guarded the city of Damascus or Damascenes in order to arrest me. He said, this one time I was at church telling people about how I came to love Jesus and they were weighing whether or not they should let me in or not. As like an actual Christian, and wouldn't you know it, the city came to arrest me. And so what happened? Paul says, so I was let down in a basket through a window in the wall and escaped his hands. Paul's saying, if I have boast in my weaknesses, we'll go all the way back. Go all the way back. I can do it. But think about it. Like, why would he bring up this one? Because to us, it sounds like such a cool story. Evade the people trying to arrest you. Jump out a wall. Jump out a window. It's not very brave of someone to sneak out of a city by getting lowered through the window in a basket and then run off. And Paul says, I'll even boast in that. Because in those moments, when I was being accepted into the Christian community, even then I was facing the trials. I had so many things to overcome because of what I had done previously. And the Christian community didn't know if they wanted me, and the Jewish community didn't want me, and the government didn't want me. And so here I am, and what happened? God showed up, and the Christians allowed me to escape by running away in a basket. Chapter 12, he's got to keep talking because apparently the whole credential thing is very important. But he's going to continue talking about all of these things. He's only covered like the normal day-to-day experiences that he has. He's going to kind of say, I'm not going to talk about these spiritual experiences, but he kind of like floats them out there to let them know, like, I'm not pretending like these also didn't happen. Also had visions, also been to places that normal people wouldn't be, but I'm not going to boast in all of these things. I'm going to boast in something else, just like he's saying. I'm going to boast in my weaknesses. And so he drives that point home again in chapter 12. So for us today, as we consider the second half of chapter 11, one, let's be reminded of Paul and his life, all of the things that he went through in an effort to follow Jesus. This list is not all-inclusive, but it's a good spattering. And what he's told us is that this, by way of example, is not proof that the gospel isn't victorious. This is what the speakers in Corinth would have said. Like, well, Paul, if he had believed in Jesus the right way, you wouldn't have been shipwrecked, you wouldn't have been whipped, you wouldn't have been beaten, you wouldn't have been stoned, you wouldn't have... And Paul's like, if that were true, all you needed to do was become a Jew, believe in Jesus, and follow him, and your life would be perfect. Why didn't it work for me? Your argument is disproved by my personal experience. I'm a Hebrew. I was born Jewish. Like, not even like one of those backdoor, like, had to proselytize to get in. I was so jealous and zealous for my religion that I was willing to bring people to be stoned to prevent it from happening. And then when I met Jesus, I chose to believe in him and to follow him. And then my life should have been perfect. Paul's like, I've got no complaints. I just got a long list of things that you're complaining about. So Paul says, I have some serious questions for someone who claims to follow Jesus and says that their lives are perfect. There's not any ounce of weakness. I'm powerful over my life. Everything is wonderful. Because Paul's like, that's just not my experience at all. And then he has a bigger problem, which is if we don't acknowledge that we will have suffering, how do we experience the grace of God to us in our sufferings? So Paul says, like, if you're going to force my arm, let me tell you about all the things that show that I'm not in control. Like, God is going to show up and be with me. And so he does, and he gives us this list. So for us, let's not oversell the, if I'm going to boast in anything, I'm going to boast about my weaknesses. Like, this isn't a call for you to just go around and tell everybody about how miserable your life is or about how bad of a person you are, okay? Sometimes we get that idea, especially if we just read that one verse because it's a verse we know and we just get there. Like, yeah, if I'm going to say good things about stuff, it's only going to be about how bad I am. That's not what Paul's saying. He's saying if you want to see evidence of my faith being actively lived out, let me tell you about all the situations that have happened to me that I was powerless in, yet God came and gave me the necessary comfort in it. This is to be a reminder for us to not be ashamed, to not hide, to not display all aspects of our lives. Which means that we also need to be the kind of people that it's good for other people to do that with. We can be ashamed to say, like, oh, you know, I really messed this stuff up. Or, you know, this kind of stuff is happening to me and I feel like there's just nothing is going right. Okay. Because we know that in those moments, God is with his children. Let us be willing, like Paul, to use ourselves as testimony to God's strength in our weakness. And let us not fall prey. Let us not be the kind of people that put up with foolishness to the point where, like, you know, it'd be okay if you enslaved me to follow after this checklist of things I have to do for God to like me. It's okay if you mistreat me and think rudely of me and domineer me. It's fine. As long as I get what I want. Because that's what's going on in the church in Corinth. That some people are buying into a false gospel, willingly just abandoning what they've been given before in the hopes that they will get something better. And like we talked about last week, gospel is plenty good on its own. You don't need more. You don't need better. We're sinners. We need Jesus to save us. And he's promised to save us and to bring us eternal life. And in the meanwhile, in our struggles, in our suffering, in our weakness, he will continue to show up. So let's give testimony to it and be ready for it. Like when weak stuff happens to us, look for God to show up. He's on his way. And then be willing to talk about it to other people, because that is exactly what God intends to do with the suffering that still remains in a life, even after believing in a victorious gospel that promises an end with no suffering, that in the meanwhile, God will be with us. We're going to hear very similar things again next week, so be prepared for that. Dear Father, thank you for your word, and thank you for your promises to be with us, that your grace will arrive right on time and right in the right place for us. Help us to not be afraid or ashamed to be weak, as we are just clay vessels. Help us to understand that the strength in our life and the strength of the gospel comes from you and does not exclude us from going through things we'd rather not. That our lives might be very hard, but even in our hard times in our lives, we can live in a way that demonstrates your goodness, your comfort, your grace, and your presence in our lives to others, and to use that as a testimony. That although we remain weak, and although we remain in a world that is broken, that you show up to hold us up. Help us to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, about being open, about the aspects of our lives that are the best way to demonstrate your strength by comparing it to our weakness. We ask that you would be helping us do that this week as we talk to other people, as lives are not an easy thing. To not give pat answers of God's with you, but to be able to share a personal example of how you were with us when we were weak, and that you will gladly do the same for others. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.